Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Josie. I'm a crystal meth addict and alcoholic.
Wait, Joe. Kylie, can you mute everybody? Thank you, honey.
Joe, you'll have to unmute yourself again.
I just did. I saw it. Okay. All right. Thank you. How's everybody doing? I know you're all muted, so you can't really answer. But I hope everyone's doing okay. Tonight we are on the second half of More About Alcoholism and the top of 37. And I just want to mention, so we're finishing up the first half of the first step, okay? We were powerless over alcohol, my life has become unmanageable. The first half of the first step, before the dash, we're looking at 2 points of control. The first point of control we looked at through the doctor's opinion up to page 23 was, can I control the amount once I start? When I put alcohol, when I put drugs in my body, can I control the amount? And we looked at the drama in our lives. You know, we went to the story of the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I could look at all the drama in my life and see the craziness outside. You know, I could see the consequences of my drinking, see the consequences of my using, which is a good factor to let me see how my loss of control happened in my life. Okay. Most of us have got here behind consequences of our drinking and using. If we weren't experiencing consequences, I don't know why we would stop. I mean, I wouldn't stop if I didn't have the consequences in my life. It's just the way it is. So the first point of control was, can I control the amount? And the second point of control that we've been looking at from 23 up to tonight, 43, is can I control the stop? And we're really getting deep into the insanity that happens before I pick up, okay? And last week, Tyla had mentioned three words to you: power, choice, and control. Power is strength, control is ability, and choice is two or more reasonable options. And the question was, if I lose one, do I lose all three? And I could look and I could go through that page on page 30, and where it says the word control, I could change that and substitute choice, or I could change that and substitute power. All three of those words were interchangeable. And I see that when I lose one, I lose all three. When I lost power, I never really had control, and therefore I never had a choice. And if I lost choice, I didn't really have power, and I really couldn't control the situation either. And the big book talked about, when I was in control of it, when I tried to control my drinking and my using, I wasn't enjoying it. Control and enjoying my drinking, you know, when I was controlling it, I wasn't enjoying it. And when I was out of control, I was enjoying it. it's the only way I enjoyed it, when I was completely out of control. And every time by the time I was trying to get sober, every time I drank and used, I lost control. Every time. And I didn't know what that looked like. And sometimes it was 3 days and sometimes it was 30 days. And my run sometimes would last 9 months. You know, it was just, I would be on a run and I would go with the drugs. The drugs would just take me. So we looked at these 2 points of control, and we've been looking, diving into the insanity. And we got to these four, we've done two of the four stories and more about alcoholism. One was carpet slippers, who the idea behind that was, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You know, he had an overpowering, he had his mindset that he was going to stop drinking and using. And he did that for 20, 25 years, right? That he didn't have the obsession, but he lost control. So we saw that he, after 4 years, after drinking again, he died. He went to pieces and died quickly. And the story behind that, or the lesson behind that, was once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And I can relate my story to these stories that we're looking at. The next one we looked at was Jim, the car salesman, who was full of resentment. He owned a business, lost a business, and then worked for the guy who had the business, you know? And we went through his story, and we looked at sanity and insanity, that suddenly the thought crossed his mind to put an ounce of whiskey in his milk, and it couldn't hurt him on a full stomach. And he vaguely sensed he was not being too smart, that sanity versus insanity. And I'm going to talk more about that on the next page. And we ended on top of 37, where the big book gives its first definition of insanity, okay? It says, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How could such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? The big book's definition for insanity is lack of proportion of the ability to think straight. And the asterisk in the Big Book Awakening is insane, having an unsound mind showing bad judgment. Now, lack of proportion of the ability to think straight. I can't think straight, okay? I can't connect A to B here. And when I look at my drinking and my using, lots of times I had my excuse to start drinking and using was not proportionate to the consequences that I experienced as a result of my drinking and using. And I couldn't bring anything to mind to stop me. The consequences that I was gonna experience or had experienced in the past did not have enough power when I brought them to mind to stop me. Nothing could come to mind to stop me. Remember, I said this a few weeks ago, that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's cunning because it always gets me back there. It's baffling because once I'm there, I'm baffled at how I ever got there again. And it's powerful because it's more powerful than anything I could bring to mind to stop me. More powerful than any consequence, anything I can think of, any way of thinking it through, any mental defense that I can bring to the table to stop me. It has more power than that. The next paragraph, which I'm going to start reading, it says, "You may think this is an extreme case. Chueza is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences." And I look at my story and look at, when did I think of the consequences? I knew what was going to happen. So in the beginning of my drinking and my using, maybe my first couple of times in treatment, I was kind of invincible, you know? And I had just experienced some consequences. Later on, as years progressed, I knew what was going to happen. You know, I knew what was going to happen to me. I knew every time I drank and used, bad things happened. I lost things. I lost relationships. I lost jobs. I mean, I quit my job for no reason. I quit my job to be a full-time drug addict. That was a great idea. You know, I'm like, you know, work is just getting in the way of my drug use. I think it's time to go. So I quit and I didn't work for many, many years. And I had odd jobs here and there, you know, because I tried to pull it together because I was living with someone and I had to act like I was trying to work, you know, but I was really just a hooker. I mean, when you live with someone and you have sex with them and you get free room and board and you get free drugs, I mean, you're kind of a prostitute. Sorry, I hate to break it to you. So it's just what it is. So I'm doing this. I'm reflecting on the consequences. I know I'm going to lose these things. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to have emotional pain. I'm going to have physical pain. I'm going to hurt people. And the excuse that I never hurt anyone by myself is fucking bullshit. So if you say that or you hear anyone say that, it's bullshit. I hurt everyone I ever came in contact with. I hurt all my family. I hurt my employers. I hurt everyone. Okay. I was a tornado that ran through people's lives. I didn't just sit home and not know anybody. I think that's a lie that we like to tell ourselves. But I knew the consequences and I did it anyway. You know, I knew it was going to happen and I was doing these things anyway. And sometimes I could think it through. I could think it through, you know, I thought it through. And then there was other times that there was always this curious mental phenomenon, something in my mind that is going on that I don't understand that ran parallel with this thinking. It's like sanity and insanity running parallel with each other at the same time. And the sanity always won out. It always won out. The insane thought overpowered the sane thought. And I had lots of reasons not to. I had lots of excuses to drink and use. And I always ended up doing it. Okay. I'm going to continue reading. That parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out, and it always won out every time. Next day, we asked ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Now, this is a description of a spiritual malady, right? And over each one of these things, you can look at fear. They're all rooted. Fear is the root. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. All these things, 100 forms of fear, all these things are rooted in fear. Nervousness, fear. Anger, fear. Worry, fear. Depression, or jealousy of the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. Not proportionate, right? I've asked people, I've heard people in meetings share, you know, why did you pick up again? I was asked this many times too, but why did you use? Oh, you know, the relationship I got out of, or they were cheated on, or they lost a loved one in their life. Like someone died and then you look at the consequences that they experience by their drinking and using, and it's not proportionate. I mean, hell, if I broke a shoelace, that would be a good enough excuse to go out and use. And then the consequences I'm experiencing is I'm losing my place to live. You know, I'm living with sober people. I lived with a sober roommate for a long time, and I knew I was going to get kicked out. I knew if I used again, because I'd already relapsed with him. I mean, I had sponsors. Let me backtrack. I had sponsors. I'd smoke meth in their bathrooms, you know? So don't fucking tell me to rely on my sponsor. I mean, when his bathroom's all messed out. I mean, you know, and I guess I'll make amends later, but he kind of knew who I was when I got there, you know? So I'm living with sponsors and I'm using, you know? I'm living with sober roommates and I'm using, and I knew I would get kicked out. I knew it wasn't appropriate. And here I am hiding a bottle of vodka under the bed and I got needles in the closet, you know? And this was my life. And I would reflect on these consequences. Sometimes I didn't reflect on them. It doesn't matter. It just always happened, right? We see now that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. Or I thought about it and I didn't even care. It says, our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. Now, I'm going to read this the changed way. Because I never read it this way until I did the Big Book Awakening. And I'm sitting in treatment, mind you, I've been to treatment 9 or 10 times. And I'm sitting in treatment for the 9th time, and I'm reading this story, and this is my life, okay? It says, say for drinking and using. He gets a thrill out of hanging out at the bars and the dealer's house. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him and he goes on a major bender many times, several in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently he gets drunk and loaded again, and this time has medical complications. Within a week after leaving the hospital, he's back at the dealers and on another run. He tells you he's decided to stop using for good, drinking and using for good, but in a few weeks, he's back using and at the bar again. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep away from the liquor store and the dealers altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce. He is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the using and drinking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in a rehab, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he's back at the dealers or at the bar again, which sets off another spree. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. And I read that and I see that this is my life. You know, I'm picking up, I'm going on a run, I'm running hard, I'm losing everything, and I'm winding up in treatment. I leave treatment, I run back to the dealer's house. And sometimes it was like, you know, they're going to talk about strange mental blank spots. I remember leaving treatment, the first treatment I went to, and I'm smoking weed right out of treatment. I'm like, well, weed wasn't even a problem. You know, it's not that big of a deal. And then I remember thinking, well, there's a lot of stuff I heard in treatment that I haven't tried yet, you know? So maybe I should start doing this. Maybe I'm going to try it this way. Maybe I can control it this way. Now I'm trying to control my drinking and using by all these different routes of admission. And here I am loaded again. Losing everything again, you know? And this was my life over and over and over again. However intelligent we may have been in other respects where alcohol hasn't been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? Now, one of the most powerful exercises that we did in the Big Book Awakening and the questions was the 10 most insane things I've ever done drunk or loaded, right? And they had me list that. You know, I'm new. I did lots of insane things when I was drinking and using, you know, and I'm sure you all did too. So under the influence, I have this list of, and I'm not going to read it, but I had a lot of stuff that I did behind drugs and alcohol. And so here it is. I'm using, they're taking me out from behind my biggest excuse, you see, from behind the biggest excuse for all the insane things that I've done in my life. I've always had the excuse that it was the drugs and the alcohol's fault. All right. It's the drug's fault that this happened, that I got arrested, that the crazy things happened, that I stole from family, that I was running around with needles and whatnot. All because of the drugs. I did it under the influence. And what they're doing here is they take me out from behind my biggest excuse and say, the most insane thing you did is not even on the list. Because the most insane thing that I've ever did is, having had that happen to me, I seemingly made the choice or decision to put drugs and alcohol back in my system again, with all the evidence that I have and all the consequences that I've experienced. So what's happening here is, I'm starting to see the insanity sober, right? And I have to get this peace. I have to see how insane I am sober. That the insanity strikes, it precedes the first drink. It strikes when I'm as sober as I am today. I make the most insane decision of my life, and that's to pick up another drink and another drug. Now, if I don't see this, why would I ever go for a power greater than myself? See, what we're really looking at here is sanity versus insanity. It's not about choice. It's about operating from a sane mind and an insane mind. Now, if I went for lack of a better example, to a meeting, and I told everyone, my name is Joe, and guess what, everyone? I made the choice today not to jump off a cliff. Right? And everyone said, oh, congratulations. And they clapped. You know, that's like me saying I have a choice over drinking and using. It's insane for me to ever want to pick up again. It is insane. It's not a choice. Drinking and using is not a reasonable option. So I don't have a choice here, right? I don't have a choice to drink and use. I have a choice not to drink and use. And when that really settled down in me and really hit my heart, the fight was over, because I don't have a choice either way. You know, from an insane mind, and I talked about this a few years ago, but I'm bringing it up again because of where we're at. From an insane mind, I could decide not to drink and use and do it anyway. From a sane mind, I would never make the decision to pick up again, right? So where's the choice? How can I ever say I had a choice? I have a choice today, or that I ever did, you know, because I don't have one. But I got to see this peace. I got to see this insanity in my life, because why would I go for an act of God in my life? Why do I need a power greater than myself? And you'll see it all the time. People don't need God. People don't need to meditate. They don't need to pray. They don't need to do these things that we do in this program. And we looked at that on page 34, remember? That to the degree that I need a spiritual experience, to the degree that I lost the power of choice. And that's what we're looking at here, is when I'm looking at this insanity in my life, I have to see how insane I am to want to be able to be restored to sanity. And the only way that I'm going to be able to get that is through divine help, and it's through a power greater than myself. And I'm not going to go for that. I'm going to have a lot of problems in step two if I don't see the insanity in step one. You know, why would I want to go for this God thing? If my drug problem isn't bigger than my God problem, then I'm going to have a real fucking problem getting sober and staying happy in this room. Okay. And that's from me originally. Okay, so let me continue. Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely to, for we understand ourselves so much, so well, after you have told us that such things cannot happen again. We have not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information. Thanks. Peace out. See you later. This is funny. Thanks for the information. I had so much information from treatment, so much self-knowledge. I was actually turned away from a treatment center because of the treatment that I had before. They said, we can't help you. Like, who does that happen to? They're like, I'm sorry, you've already had too much extensive treatment that this would be a waste for you. And I'm like, okay, thanks. You know, it says that may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been as damaged as ours were. But the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize, to smash home upon our alcoholic readers, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration. Now, we're going to talk about Fred. Fred's story is a little bit different than Jim's story. Okay. Now, in Fred's story, there's kind of like this, it kind of smashes the if onlys. Because let me read this first paragraph first. It says, Fred is partner in a well-known accounting firm. So here's Fred's possible consequences of drinking again. Says he has good income. Okay? He has a fine home. He's happily married. He's the father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. So he has attractive personality and has a lot of friends. If ever there was a successful businessman, he's successful, it is Fred. To all appearances, he is stable. He is a stable, well-balanced individual. Yet he is alcoholic. Okay, so he's stable and well-balanced, fine home. He has things that I told myself I needed to be okay. Okay? He has the things that I thought that if my life looked a certain way, that I would be okay. That maybe I wouldn't drink, maybe I wouldn't use, or that everything, I'd be able to control it. You know, the circumstances of my life. So it smashes the if onlys, that idea that, oh, you drink too if you had my life, blah, 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 blah. You know, like these people in the room, like the way I was raised, I was this happened to me and that happened to me. Like, get fucking over it. You know, how long are you going to use this excuse for it? Get over it. You know, and I did this myself too. You know, oh, I'm gay. My father left me. Wah, 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 wah. You know, this big sad story. The circumstances of my life never told me, never explained to me why I'm an alcoholic or an addict. It didn't. That's not why. That doesn't make me an alcoholic or an addict. The way I was raised, the way I was brought up, the things that happened to me, you know, the things we were poor. Oh, well, lots of poor people grow up that way and they're not alcoholic or addict. And I was, you know, so it smashes these if onlys in Fred's story. And this is why I like Fred's story. So let me continue to read. Yet he is alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. Nervousness. DTs, probably. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was alcoholic, so he can't even admit that he's an alcoholic here. So he can't accept the first step. He told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether forever. So how many times have I made up my mind to stop drinking and drank anyway? You know, I've made up my mind. I've had lots of experiences where the next day I said, I'm never doing that again, and did it anyway. I did it a couple hours later. I'll tell you about one in a little bit. It says it never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, which is step one, much less accept a spiritual remedy, step two, for his problem. We told him what we knew of alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, craving, obsession. But he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. You know, how many times have I heard in the rooms to remember the last time I got loaded? And that this is like a mental defense, right? That all I have to do is stay on guard and remember the last time I drank and used, and the consequences that I experienced, the incomprehensible demoralization that I experienced, and God forbid, I'll never do that again. You know, my incomprehensible demoralization got me arrested in a shameful situation. And at my very best, I left jail and got loaded again. Hours later, you know, at my very best, insanity struck me and I got loaded again. So as we heard no more of Fred for a while, one day we were told that he was back in the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told is most instructive. For here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. So he had all these like mental defenses. He had a lot of defenses. He had a lot of self-knowledge. He had a humiliating experience that he acquired. He was convinced he had to stop drinking, no excuse for drinking, had splendid judgment and determination. He had a lot more than I had trying to get sober, okay? Let him tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink. But I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. Now, I think this is good to look at. What am I sharing about in a meeting? What am I sharing about with newcomers? Because when I was new and I was going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never heard about the ideas of subtle insanity, which precedes the first drink. I never heard that. And I don't know if maybe I was just, because maybe I was loaded at the meeting, because that happens sometimes too, but I didn't hear people talking this way. I didn't hear people explaining the first step this way. I didn't hear them talking about the symptoms of the physical craving and the mental obsession and how that came about with someone and how to diagnose myself as an alcoholic or an addict, right? I didn't hear these things. So this says a lot to me of how I'm working with others and what I'm sharing in meetings, okay? And that the insanity, no matter if it's 5 minutes, however long it takes, like insanity can strike in me and a year later I pick up. It could happen in 5 minutes. It could happen in 30 days. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it always happens. It precedes the first drink, okay? Insanity always happens before I pick up again, all right? Not after. Insanity is before, right? It says, I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident. That would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. I hear this all the time. This is what I thought sobriety was. It was thinking it through and keeping on guard and going to meetings going to meetings. Avoid people, places, and things. Change everything in your life. Change people, places, and things. I can't go here. I can't go there. And I got sober where I was using. And in that situation, there's no way I could have followed those guidelines because I used and drank everywhere. I get loaded and walk the streets, you know what I mean? And I was drinking and using and running around, running amok all over the city of San Diego. And then I'm supposed to change everything. That meant I'm not supposed to even be able to get sober in San Diego because the fear of I'm not on guard. You know, I have to be on guard all the time. I can't talk to this person. I can't go here. And I don't want to be chained to drugs and alcohol that way. And that to me is not sober. You know, having to think about things constantly. I don't have the power to do that. You know, I don't have the power to think my way out of all these situations and all these little details and whatnot. Like that is insanity to me today. It's insane for me to think that I can do that. And what this chapter is doing, the biggest thing this chapter is doing is trying to get me to see that self-knowledge will not fix me and that I need power greater than myself, that I can't do this on my own. And all those things I learned in the meetings and in the rooms, all that stuff had to be set aside, all of it, you know, because it was all a lie. And my experience was different than what I was hearing in the rooms, because the rooms were telling me that I could do these things. The rooms were telling me that I could think it through and I could rely on my great mind and that I had the power to keep myself sober and that I should have called my sponsor. I should have done this. And they're shitting all over me. You know what I mean? You should have this, you should have that. And there's a lot of shame that can be given to people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that can't stay sober and they don't even know what's wrong with them. You know, I didn't even know about the subtle insanity that precedes the first drink. I mean, I knew something was happening. But I couldn't get out of it, you know, and no one told me, no one sat me down and said, you have a disease, you know, you have a disease of the mind and the body, and you couldn't have done it any other way, you know, and that you need a power greater than yourself. If the mind that got here 5 years ago or before I got sober, you know, if the mind that got here was the same mind sober, like, I don't think I would have made it, you know, I had to have a drastic change mentally, emotionally, and physically. You know, and I got that in the program. You know, I got that when I first got here, and now I've nurtured it all this way. All right. But something had to happen here, and it wasn't coming from me. And my sponsor would have me do little things, you know what I mean? Like to try and get out of myself. And I tried to be unselfish, and I put little cards on people's cars and stuff like that. Like, have a nice day, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd go buy flowers and give them to someone that's sitting on the bus stop and be like, oh, God loves you. Have a good day. You know, and I tried fucking everything, you know what I mean? To try and stay sober. I tried living with people. I tried relationships. I tried therapy, group therapy, you know what I mean? And nothing worked, you know, nothing. They told me, you know, come help us move and go mow my lawn and do all this shit in the rooms. And I was raising my hand to try and be of service because that's what I had to do to get sober. And I get a fucking Subway sandwich and I'd get loaded again anyway. You know what I mean? They didn't even give me money. You know, I was getting used in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that's what was really happening here. And but I was willing, and they'd say get commitments, and I'd have a cookie commitment, and then when I was loaded, they didn't get their cookies, you know. And they told me a commitment would keep you sober, and that and I was committed, but I needed to be committed. I was getting loaded so much. And I was a 30-day wonder, you know. I was a 30-day wonder. I was the one in the back of the room, and I know I'm a little off track right here, but I was in the one in the back of the room that was constantly in the first 30 days. And people would ask me, how much time you have? And I'd be enough, you know, enough to listen to your fucking ass in the room, you know what I mean? Like, I have enough, you know, that was my answer, enough, you know, because I was like 3 days, 2 days, 1 day, maybe I didn't have any days, you know, but I would still show up, but I'd be loaded, or I'd go get loaded, you know. And I was one of those crazy people. And I know you guys have had one in your home group that you're like, oh, there's that crazy bitch, or that's that crazy person. Like, we're tired of her, tired of him, you know? And that was me. That was me in the rooms, full of shame and guilt, you know, because I thought I could do it. Now, let me continue. I'm off track. exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. Okay. In the frame of mind of that I could do it, self-reliance, I went about my business, and for a time, all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I had not been making too hard work of a simple matter. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. He worked for a government bureau, right? So this is a sharp guy, you know? These were sharp men. Bill, Bob, this guy right here, Fred, Jim, they were very intelligent people, and they couldn't get this thing. Okay, I always keep that in mind too. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there's nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well, I was pleased, and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of the perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Now, this guy still drinks, even though he had all these mental defenses, and at the end of a perfect day, you know? My alcoholic ego wants to tell me what the day is going to look like when I will drink again. My ego wants to tell me what it's going to look like when I use again. And it's going to be this bad day. I'm going to be going through these bad emotions. I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose my relationship. And then I'm going to go out, you know? And I have this whole picture of what's going to happen. And that's going to take me out. You know, it's going to be all this bad stuff. But what about the good stuff? When did I ever drink and use when there was no pressing problems in my life, but I drank and used anyway, you know? When I had no worries, you know, when things were going well in my life, when I was getting my life back together, you know, I would be out of treatment. My life was getting put back together, you know, and then I'd watch it go crashing all down again. And this happened over and over again. But while I'm building it up, you know, stuff's looking good. I'm having a job. I'm working. I'm living in a nice place now. And I watch it all go away, you know. So this bullshit lie that I tell myself of when it's going to look like, you know, the lie I tell myself of the day it's going to look like when I can drink and use, that I will drink and use again. You know, I have to see this delusion, these lies. I buy these lies that take me out, you know, and the truth is I really don't know why I do it, you know, and if I can tell you any excuse, it's probably a lie, or it's a lie that I've told myself and I've believed. Or I've made other people believe of why I pick up and why I drink and use again. Yeah. Now, let's continue the story. So they went to the hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. This is from Tyler. He just crossed the threshold from sanity to insanity. That's the threshold he crossed in his leisure wear. and the lie here is that he's only going to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That's the lie, right? That's all I'm going to have. I'm just going to have one. I'm just going to do it for the weekend. I'm just going to do it to drop a few pounds. You know, I've told myself all these things. Yeah. And then there you go, off and running. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail and my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me, insanity struck it. A highball would be fine before going to bed. Or if you're like me, an 8-ball, okay? Just change the words, it's fine. I'll just go have an 8-ball now. So I stepped into the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being on an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxi cab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. As soon as I gained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friend had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. Now, this is, I almost look at it as like a promise of step one. Step one is not, I can't drink or use again. Right. And I've heard that a lot in the rooms that I can't, almost like I'm a victim of it. You know, the truth here is I will drink again. If I don't find something to come between me and drugs and alcohol or me and that obsession or that insanity, I will pick up again. And that's a fact. And that's been my experience. No matter what, I drink and use no matter what. So this is not, I can't drink and use. The first step is really about, I will drink and use if I don't find something to come between me and alcohol. Okay? So as they said, they said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. And looking back, there's many times where I started drinking and using again, and I would be on a run, and I look back and I thought, how did it ever happen? You know, how did I ever get here? Even though I knew I was going to be there, I couldn't believe it actually still happened. You know, like, here we are again. I remember the last time I went into a treatment, it was a day treatment, and they asked me that question, what's changed? And just some truth came out. It's like nothing. I still don't know. Like, the players have changed, the times have changed, but I'm still getting loaded and I don't know why, you know? And every other time I had an excuse, you know, and I'd go into the rooms and have an excuse. This time, you know, this time, and I'm working with people, I hear all these this times. This time I'm really gonna listen. This time I'm really gonna do the four step. Or this time I'm really gonna go to more meetings. And like this time is gonna be different because of this. And I had so many this times that it was never gonna be, I knew it was never gonna be different, you know? And I couldn't even bring that, I couldn't even say that anymore. Because I had excuses like, if I have money, I'm gonna drink and use because I'm gonna buy alcohol and drugs, you know? So I can't have money. And then I wouldn't have money and then I'd be so miserable I'd drink and use anyway. So I had all these excuses and then had the opposite of them. I can't have a car because if I have a car, I can't trust myself. I'm going to go drive and get loaded. And then I wouldn't have a car and I'd be miserable anyway and I'd go get loaded anyway. It didn't matter if I had a car or didn't have a car. It didn't matter if I had a family or I didn't have a family in my life. It didn't matter if I had a relationship or if I had a relationship or didn't have a relationship. And then I'd hear all this stuff about sex. Oh, I can't have sex. I have to like never even look at a thigh, you know what I mean? Like, because if I have sex or I even think about sex, I'm going to go out and then don't have sex and I go out anyway, you know, or and then I have lots of sex and I go out anyway. It didn't matter. You know, I have all these excuses and the opposite of those excuses. And my experience has been, I used with them and without them. So no excuse I could ever bring to mind, you know, no excuse I could ever really believe in anymore, you know, because I burned all of them out. And I think that's good for me, for my experience, because I needed to do that. And a lot of people maybe not have had that many experiences. And so it's good for me to share with them. And when I'm working with people and I'm hearing them tell me that this time or this excuse, and then we can play that out. You know, we can really talk about it and see, well, what was the real reason why you used? Because we really don't know, you know, they really don't know. Two members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much, and then asked me if I thought myself an alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I had exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. Now, this this process should do that for me. And I have faith in the process. So before I go tell someone to go drink and use because they're unsure of if they're an alcoholic or not, I could take them through this process and go through this process and go through the big book and get them to have this conviction that they can't do the job by themselves and snuff out the last flicker of conviction that they could do the job by themselves. But I could trust in the first step process, okay? By going through this work the way that we're doing it, turning statements into questions, answering the questions, and looking at what the big book is talking about. And we can go over their experience and see that they can get a full knowledge of their condition through this work. They don't have to go out again. Then they outlined the spiritual answer and the program of action, which hundreds of them had followed successfully. Though it had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant I would have to throw lifelong conceptions out of the window. That was not easy. And the biggest conception is that I could do the job myself. You know, there's lots of conceptions in there. And this is a reference to the set-aside prayer. Lots of conceptions in my life had to change. And they did change. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through the process, I had a curious feeling that my alcohol condition was relieved, as in fact, it proved to be. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. Not some of my problems, all of my problems. And this is not just about not drinking. This is about all of my problems in my life. And it's going to tell me again this on page 69, that it will solve all of my problems, spiritual principles. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying, and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it even if I could. There was no choice. Fred's story speaks for itself. We hope it strikes home to thousands like him. We had felt only the first nip of the ringer. Most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve their problems. Many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusions. One of these men, staff member of a world-renowned hospital, who was Percy Pollock from Bellevue Hospital, New York. He was a psychiatrist. This is the fourth one. We had Silkworth, Young, William James, and now this guy. They're all going to tell me the same thing. He made this statement to some of us. What you say about the general hopelessness of the average alcoholic's plight is, in my opinion, correct. As to two of you men whose stories I had heard, there's no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless, apart from divine help. Had you offered yourself as patients at the hospital, I would not have taken you if I had been able to avoid it. People like you are too heartbreaking. Though not a religious person, I have a profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there's virtually no other solution. They're all telling me that I need divine help in one way or another. I need a spiritual experience to recover from this. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power other than human. Everything I can bring to mind, everything I can bring forward, human power will not help me. I have to get power greater than myself. And so how can I rely on the group as my higher power when that's a human power? And the other question is, are you a rare case and are you willing to roll the dice? So anyway, thank you guys for letting me share. Sorry I went over in time.
Awesome, Joe. Just awesome. Oh my gosh. Amazing.
I am not going to call on people tonight. I think I'm going to just open it up and let the group share.
Let me remind the group quickly that we ask you to try to keep your sharing to 3 minutes so as many people can share as possible. If you all want to unmute, like Joe said, and just shout out. You might have to call on people, Joe.
My name's Dean and I'm an alcoholic. Joe, that was an awesome share and I totally appreciated it. The part I appreciated the most was when you shared about needing the drink for Nookie. I definitely needed the drink in all aspects of my life. And that was a major one because I wanted to perform acts that I wasn't willing to. And so I did that. And I just know now that I can be who I am without the drink. And I like that. I like being who I am without the drink. So again, thank you very much for your lead. And I so appreciate you.
That was beautiful, D. Thank you so much. I love what you just shared.
Hi, Joe. This is Marie. And I just want to say thank you. I love when you share, and I can so relate to your experience and how I, you know, suffered in and out of the rooms of AA for so long because I never knew that I had a disease because I would use that for an excuse when I would relapse and my family would get mad at me. I would be like, I have a disease and it's just like cancer. So why are you mad at me? I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know that I had an obsession of the mind that would always take me back to drink. I didn't know that I had a physical craving that once I took a drink, I didn't know what would happen. And like you said, it could be days, it could be weeks, it could be months. And just like you talked about, I would build up this beautiful life. It would take me years and years. And then out of the blue, I would have a thought and everything came crashing down and I would use again. And, you know, when I got to BBA, I had a number of years behind me without drinking, but I was so miserable. I hated the people. I started just to go to phone meetings because I couldn't even look at people anymore. I hated everybody. I hated me. And it's just so amazing how I found BBA and how I understand what's going on with me today. And I don't have to feel bad about it, you know, and that there's a solution for me that really does solve all my problems. Like all the things I was having trouble with when I got here, without me doing anything, they've all resolved themselves. All I've done was ask God every day to direct my thinking and to give me inspiration and to not take, you know, to not take steps unless I'm directed, you know, and I don't react anymore like I used to. And, you know, I can't say enough about BBA and this workshop, you know, is just driving it home to me more. And I feel like I'm learning so much more, and I'm just so grateful for you, Joe, and for Tyler, and for BBA. You know, it's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your share. That was great.
Hi, I'm Donna. Oh, it's okay if I share.
Donna, go ahead. Yes.
Joe, you are just amazing. I just smile every time that you lead us through. You know, this humiliating experiences, and I so identify with Fred. You know, he thinks that it's all of the consequences, all the things that he's gone through. And then he says, because he's got a little bit of time, like I did, all of a sudden, those consequences, those humiliating experiences turn into a little simple matter. Well, how does that happen? And I so identify when things are going fine, I wasn't even trying to be on guard. I wasn't even trying to watch because all of a sudden life is going fine. Who's thinking about alcohol? So whether I watched or not, I picked up. There was something else. So much. You know, alcoholics have to be pretty mangled before they really commence to solve their problem. I mean, I was sinking in quicksand and I was watching myself sink. And it wasn't until the quicksand was right up underneath my nose that I said, oops, perhaps I have a problem. And the lie, when the thought came to mind, the only thought that came to mind was having a drink, a couple of drinks with dinner, that was all, nothing more. And that's how my mind operates. It just says, oh, you want to. It doesn't call to mind the humiliating experiences, because I'm experiencing this shit with cigarettes. It'll just say, oh, you want a cigarette. Well, what happened to, you know, you might get cancer, you know, like it makes your teeth yellow. You know that if you keep on smoking, you're going to have a sore throat. And so what happens, because this thing is so powerful, it's been 20 years since I've had a drink, but it's been only a couple of a month since I had cigarettes. So I'm really seeing the power of this disease. Every time I picked up, I would say, okay, well, I'll just wait until my throat starts hurting again and then I'll stop. Insanity. So thank you. There's probably a lot more, but that comes to mind that I want to share. Thank you, Joe. You're amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your share.
Hi, my name is Veronica and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Veronica.
And oh my God, thank you so much, Joe, for just breaking it down. You know, I love hearing this part. I need it to hear about the insanity that precedes the first drink. I just want to share, and thank you, Marie V, for sharing. That's me, you know. I'll build everything up and everything is going great. Not a cloud on the horizon. And then I get this idea, what if? It's, you know, what if, you know? And I can relate to that, but this Saturday, it wasn't like that. You know, I expected someone to do something that they promised they were gonna do. And so it didn't happen. And I got irritated and I got all bent out of shape. And then I started thinking about all the work that I need to do in this fellowship and all the work here. And that I need, you know, I'm trying to do this perfectly. I'm trying to please them. Just all this bull crap. And I'm in the mirror and I'm saying, you know what? I'm just gonna go have me a drink. I just F all of this. I'm sick of all this shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of having to come to people and explain all this shit. You know what I'm saying? And I'm all in my head, you know? And at the same time, I'm saying, God, please help me. At the same time, I'm knowing that God can. I know that no human power can do this for me. I just kept saying, God, please help me. God, please save me from myself, you know? And then I'm getting ready and I'm saying, oh my God, I want to go to clubs. I'm so bored. I want to get out. And I sat on the bed and I got with God and I started praying and I started meditating and I started listening to Christian music that I listened to and, you know, some praise. Mm-hmm. And then the phone rang. I believe that God works through other people, you know, and it was a friend and I told her how I was doing and she gave me some suggestions. And then I had a family tree meeting to go to and I just laid it out there and I shared about it in a meeting, you know, and today, that was Saturday. Yesterday, I didn't have a thought on the horizon about a drink, you know, but I was just caught up in that insanity. And I'm so grateful that I did not go and have that drink. And so I'm really grateful to be here tonight and to be here sober, you know, and I shared about that. And when I shared about that in my home group, there were three people who were glad that I shared that we're having the same type of Saturday. It was like, what is about the Saturday? You know, anyway. Yeah, so I'm you know, sometimes I feel like, but dang, Veronica, you did all the work. You going on 5 years. Why are you still having these? What does that come from? Why are you still having these ideas of taking that drink? You know, you didn't do the steps right. You know, you still having reservations. You know, I want to know, am I being too hard on myself? Is that just something that's going to happen or? But is that something that happens, you know, when you had worked the steps and I feel like I did a really good step one, but that reservation was still there.
Did you hear the question, Joe?
Oh, were you asking the question?
She was asking you a question.
Yes.
About when does that go away?
No, I was saying that I was being like beating myself up because I was like, okay, here you go again. You had a reservation. You didn't work your step one the way you should have. You know, there's something missing. You know, does that just happen sometimes? Out of the blue, the insanity, or, you know.
So my experience with that is there's a difference between like thoughts and obsession. And sometimes I will have fleeting thoughts. But my experience with the obsession was it was so strong and the insanity was so strong with me that when it struck, I was out. So like it didn't last. I didn't have much time. I mean, maybe a few hours, but I was still in, I was going in my mind and it was already happening. You know what I mean? So, but thoughts cross my mind and those do happen. And I can't get down on myself a lot for that thinking. I've learned over the years, because early in sobriety, mm-hmm. I'd have those thoughts. And I remember I couldn't even do things. I couldn't have sex without thinking about drugs because they were attached that way. You know what I mean? But I mean, there's a lie in there. But at the same time, I would think about them all the time. And I had to let myself off the hook there, where thoughts are just thoughts and I cannot control those. And I can't beat myself up over them either, but I can have gratitude for them as well. Does that make sense?
Thank you so much. Yes, I feel so much better. Yes, thank you.
Tyler, did you want to elaborate on that?
What you said was so right on, you know, and I love that Veronica asked that question, because I think sometimes we want to beat ourselves up for things. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and it's been a long time because I have long-term sobriety. Since it's really been on me, but it's been on me before. And I think it's important that you did everything right, Veronica. You know, that's Thank what you. I loved about your share. You said, I prayed. And, you know, when you're in a state that you're in, that I hope that you were in on that Saturday, I hope you can see the grace of God working in your life. Yes. You're in a state Absolutely. And you're like, oh my God. Well, you know, I'll put on worship music like you know what I mean? Because I listen to it too. But the fact that you prayed instead of going to get a drink, to me, is the grace of God on you. And, you know, prayer is one of the most underrated things in the program that people do. Prayer is life changing, and you did it. And I just think, like Joe said so beautifully, you know, the gratitude that God's grace was on you. And we will have the thought. We will at times have a thought that could be an answer to something that I'm going through. But like Joe said, having the thought and having the obsession is different. You know what I mean? But I, you know, I don't want to romance the thought. You know what I mean? So I think you did so great. And I'm so glad you shared it.
I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Because it was scary. It was really scary because it hadn't been on me that strong before. And I was like, whoa, what is this? But I knew it was my head. I knew it was this, but I knew that God could and would if he was thought. I said,
that's right.
I keep saying, God, don't you move. That's what I said to myself.
That's beautiful. Hey, Lisa, do you want to share? I'm not running the show, Joe is, but I haven't heard Lisa share.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, baby.
Hi, guys. I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks, Joe, so much for that. You make me laugh so hard. I love it. I need to laugh. I loved all of it, but what I really loved is, you know, you talking about operating out of that sane mind or that insane mind. And, you know, I found a lot of deep truth in, this experience of going through this first step, this way. And I saw myself in, I was Mr. Carpet Slippers, Mrs. Carpet Slippers. You know, so I walked into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 22 and, just decided I didn't want to drink anymore because I needed to get my life together and I was doing a lot of binge drinking and it was easy for me to put it down. And 7 years, 8 years later, I had that insane thought, you know, where I just said, okay, maybe I can do it now. And that insanity of that obsession and craving lasted for me 8 years, you know, the progression, right? And now I'm thinking that I didn't have, when I first got sober, right, when I first put that drink down, I might not have had that mental obsession yet, right? But then the progression of it kicked in through my time of being dry. And when I picked up again, it was there and it was on me for 8 years. And then I was like, what's his name? Fred too, you know, I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had 2 years without drinking and worked the steps once. And, you know, I was on my way to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had that insanity hit me, that obsession hit me. And it literally, I was telling Marie, I mean, I felt like an alien in my body pulling me to the bar, you know, and I had, please don't drink, Lisa. You have too much to lose, right? All those mental defenses, right? Too. I was like, I've got all of this. I've got all of that. I'm fighting it, thinking that if I think it through, I won't pick up. And, you know, and I did, you know, and I was like that. How did this happen again? One of the things that I saw about myself in it is that I don't know that, you know, I was blocked off from that connection, right? And I don't know that I even asked God for help during that time, right? But I did after I picked up the drink, right? After I picked up the drink. And so I'm just seeing myself in all of it, and my brain is being blown because I thought it was that maybe I didn't want to stay sober enough, right? I thought it was that maybe, you know, I wasn't keeping on guard enough, right? That I hadn't done something right, right? And, you know, there maybe were some things that I wasn't doing that I could have been doing, but right, like I was walking to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, which I knew that I needed to get to, and I drank anyway. So this is powerful stuff. I'm seeing it in a whole new light, and I love all the shares, and I love you guys so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Hi, I'm Wendy. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Wendy.
Oh my gosh, Joe, you just did so good. I'm like, you know, that was really amazing. I got so much out of tonight's share, and one thing, Veronica, you made me remember that I was talking about with my step partner is while we're doing this work for me, and I've heard other people share it too, I experience in step one is like in every single assignment, right? But every assignment shows up in my life. And step one is like, you know, I'm powerless. My life's unmanageable. I have a spiritual malady. And even though I'm sober, I'm still experiencing it in my life. And I think, you know, and I've been really uncomfortable during this first step. And it's like, God's like, okay, Wendy, I really want you to have a great experience doing this work. And it's going to be different this time. And here's your, what's going on. And it just goes into different areas of my life and stuff. And I just wanted to share that because that's what you really reminded me of, because, you know, it's uncomfortable doing the work. And maybe some of the rest of y'all relate to it, that it just, God makes it show up in my life. And, you know, I was just thinking about how the consequences could never keep me sober, you know, and no matter, like I would write out lists of how I was going to change my life. And I'd go down to the swimming pool on my day off and fill a sippy cup full of wine and drink it while I was writing my list of how I'm going to change my life. And, you know, and then just, I was thinking also about, cause I just couldn't do it. All the consequences were so bad, but then the next day I'm drinking, even though I swore I wouldn't. And I drink all day long on my day off. And then I wake up the next day and have to go to work. And it was just crazy the way it was going. In fact, I lost a job. Well, really, I was self-employed and I got kicked out of a salon where I worked because of my drinking and using. And because I literally like redecorated an area of a salon because I didn't like how it looked and just made my little spot, you know, how I wanted it. And it really didn't go well with anybody, and especially the owner. And I stayed there all night doing it on Coke. And so, you know, it was really humiliating. And Joe, I didn't work for over a year after that one. I just moved in with my dealer, and it was really bad news. So that was and the other thing is just how the insanity hits when I'm sober. And I never saw how insane I could get sober. Like doing the steps in the BBA has shown me what being insane is. I never heard it in meetings either. I never heard like, this is the insanity that precedes the first drink or drug. Right. So here I was 8 years sober. Granted, it wasn't a great quality of sobriety. I didn't know any better at the time, but I had 8 years. And, you know, someone at work said, I just took a Percocet because my back hurts. And I'm like, oh, do you have any more? I didn't plan that, right? That's how fast it hit. It wasn't, you know, and then I was off and running for 3.5 years. And I never saw that coming. I didn't see that coming. You know, I'm grateful that I made it back. And another thing about reservations and something that I kind of think of that I've done is I've thought like, it's almost like destination happiness, right? Or destination sobriety. When I get this, I'll be sober. I'll be able to stay sober when I'm in the right relationship, when I have the right job, when I get the right car, when I have enough money. You know, there's been all these reasons why I thought I could stay sober. And I really related to when you were sharing about that. And let's see, I put another note here. But yeah, like, cause honestly, until I did the BBA, I didn't know what was wrong with me, right? So at 14 months sober, when I came back after doing the steps, and I was suicidal, I'm just so grateful that I was brought, that someone shared about the BBA, you know, and that I was able to do it. And Joe actually took me through the first time. And I don't know if that I've shared that in here before or not, but I'm just so grateful because it totally changed my life. And you know, I never heard about power, choice, or control in meetings either. You know, that you'd lose one, you lose them all. You know, I really, mostly what I heard was, I got this, I can fix me, I'm working on myself, I'm working on my defects, you know? And so I just parroted all those things, and I didn't know how to share properly in meetings either. I never know that, I didn't understand that, like, when I go to a meeting, I'm not just there to dump my stuff, right? Like, oh, all this stuff happened, you know, but I'll pray about it or whatever, right? But what really, you know, now what I know, what I've learned from doing this process of BBA and being around and hearing amazing quality sharing and people who really are happy, the happiest, like, fellowship I've ever seen in my life and the most, like, God-centered, is that... I'm losing what I'm, what, oh my God, I can't believe I just spaced out because I looked at my writing. I'm sorry. But what I'm hearing is that it's all about God, basically, right? I have to have a higher power. I can't do it. It's not about me. It is literally not about me doing anything. It is all by the grace of God. And I'm just so grateful to be here. And I really do love all of you. And I'm looking forward to just getting to know everybody better. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Wendy. Great share.
My name's Kimberly. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Kimberly.
And thank you so much, Joe. That was beautiful. It was hilarious. And I always get so much out of your honesty. Your level of honesty, you put it all out there. And speaking of that, I couldn't leave Wendy by herself out there when she talked about how she moved in with her dealer. And thank you for breaking that down and just putting it out there. That is called prostitution. And I know because I was there too. I lived on the back of a bus. This is where I was when I came in. I lived on the back of a bus with this dude who, that's called homeless, by the way. We lived on the back of the bus. And this dude, he had really good, you know, at the time I was hooked on H and alcohol and pills and whatever I could get. But he had good age. And so there we were. He had one leg and it was good, you know, whatever. Life was grand. Anyways, so thank you, because now I have a new label for that. Though Tyler has tried to tell me before, that's called prostitution. So moving on. Also, I liked how you started off. You kind of, you broke down some of the excuses when you're talking about the subtle insanity that precedes a first drink. You broke down some of the excuses and some of the stuff that we hear in meetings. And I had been one of those in the past where I would share, oh, I was abused as a child, that and the other. Basically, if you had the life that I had had, you would have done what I had done and all this other craziness. Right? And then it's interesting because this is the first time that when you were going through and reading about how Fred kind of breaks down the, you know, if onlys, right? And because, so I came in the program at 20. I came in super young. I wasn't even drinking legally by the time I determined I was an alcoholic, right? Started at 10, so, you know, I was advanced for my age. But, I was here clean and sober, 10 years, mainstream AA, and, you know, doing what they told me, all that other stuff, and you know, it was what it was. It got to the point after 10 years, I was pretty miserable, hated everybody, but the outsides looked great. Okay. I went from being, you know, homeless and all this other craziness. 10 years later, there I am. I'm a young army officer, future's looking bright. You know, I'm married. I was going through a divorce with the ex-husband, and you know, I've got a young child and this, that, and the other. I reunite with an ex, and just sitting there, it was a great day. This ex I had thought was the love of my life, childhood ex. So there I am. Yeah, things aren't great. I'm going through a divorce. That sucks. So all of a sudden I'm a young single parent, and you know, my ex-husband, soon to be ex-husband, that relationship isn't good. But here I am with what I thought was the love of my life, and you know, okay, second chances, this, that, and the other. And it was this simple. There was no thought. When the book says that there will at certain times be no effective defense, any thought even crosses your mind, there was no thought whatsoever. We're at dinner, she's drinking wine. Next thing I know, I'm drinking. That was it. She asked if I wanted a drink. That was it. And then afterwards, I told myself, you know, I spun all this stuff about how, well, you know, I'm going through this divorce, and if you had the problems I have, and, you know, and it's back to the same old song. But the reality of it is, none of that mattered. It didn't matter when things were good. It didn't matter when things were bad. It just didn't matter, because that's what we do. And I think for me, one of the things that I really got from this, and one of the things that I love the way that doing this kind of deep dive into the first step, really seeing that the excuses don't matter, for me, it dumps you out into that second step. There is no choice. Thank you, Jan. I got it. So there is no choice. And because there is no choice, like, I have to have something in between me, something, you know, that higher power that I choose to call God has to come in. I have to invite that into my life. That's the only, you know, if I have a choice, that's the only choice I have left. So anyways, thank you for that. And I love you guys. You guys are just awesome. Thank you for saving my life.
Thank you so much. Great share. Thank you. Who's next?
Helen Attic. Hello, hi, family. Liz. How y'all doing tonight? Oh my goodness. We ate good tonight, Joe. You served it up well. Very good fine dining, I tell you. That's fine dining, honey. Woo! Look, let me take my napkin and just, you know, like that. But anyway, thank you so, so much. I am getting so much out of being a part of the group, listening to the shares, getting the identification. OMG, as you were going through it, Joe, I was just so amazed thinking how this was revealed to them and how they just recorded the revelations so that we would have it today. You know, I am just blown away. That's the first thing of the revelation of the understanding of this spiritual disease that we have. And I always say that it takes a spirit to deal with the spirit, you know, and the way that it's written, how it really labels and gives me words to really understand what's happening to me. Because I would always say every time I hit the pipe, you know, I was pulling in this spirit. I thought I was just pulling in the drug, but really I was pulling in this spirit. And before I knew it, I couldn't put the spirit down. The spirit would pick me up. The spirit would tell me, jump out that two-story window. I want to go get high. The spirit would say, come on, prostitution. Oh, you said you weren't going to do that? Oh, yeah, we're doing that tonight because I need to be fed. And to have the labels of it, it just makes it come alive. It just makes it make so much sense. The way you broke down the sanity versus the insanity and the examples of both and how you're without defense, but you don't even know you're without defense. That cunningness, that baffled, oh my gosh, I'm just blown away. I'm so full right now, you guys. Thank everybody that shared. It just blows me away. being dry and coming out of the church. And I don't take that away from God, because God did remove that obsession. But I was telling Kylie when we were doing our work, you know, I was still so full of residue in my pipe, and my residue is getting pushed out through going through this work yet again in a different manner, and being humble enough and willing enough, honest enough.
We love you.
And to have a new experience, to be able to set aside everything I thought I knew. Mm-hmm. For me, it says, you know, I had a form of godliness, y'all. I don't think y'all understand. Miss Preacher Woman, Miss Speaking in Tongues, Miss Laying on Hands, but really I only had a form, but was still really denying the power thereof. And Joe, you make that so, so clear for me, how, you know, we really think we got some power. I got power if I do it this, got power if I do it that, and the way you acknowledge the stuff that, you know, they don't know no better. I didn't know no better either, that we get told in the rooms, because ego and pride won't let us sit down and get taught. But the stuff that we're told in the rooms, that is just outrageous. It's just outrageous when you sit here and you go through this like that. So, you know, I'm gonna say this and I'm gonna shut up. I always say, it's never what it looks like. You gotta look at it again. And I gotta keep looking at it again and again and again. I shared with Felicia about the peeling of the onion and how that first, you know, the crackly pieces, it just falls off. Well, that's the drugs, that's the substance. And then as we keep peeling and peeling and peeling, we get down to that thin film that you can't even see. That's how cunning my disease is on me, like the second skin, where I can't even see it. And I need this work to be able to peel that away and keep peeling till I get to the stinky part of the onion, which is my truth that will help set somebody else free. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, everybody, for letting me share.
Oh, thank you.
Woo!
Thank
you. Woo! I love you guys.
We love you.
Love you, honey.
Tyler.
Oh, I think I'm fine. I think that other people need to share more than I do. Thank you, Joe. Joe was one of the best shares ever. You know, yes. I just ditto Donna and Helen and everyone, the way that you can deliver your experience, the way that you can deliver the message. I just love you, and I've loved you from the minute I met you, and I just thank you so much for what an incredible message tonight, honey. Thank you so much. How about some guys? It's been all women. None of you guys have any insanity. What the hell?
Norm, alcoholic.
Hi, Norm.
Hey, Joe, man. You know, bro, you rock. You just have a way of, I believe, you know, God's clearly gifted you for a way to share your own story that reaches people in such a way that he speaks through you to change their lives. And so to see that in action is enough to bring a person to tears, man. So thank you for that. And so, you know, I relate to this part of this chapter so, like, completely, because when we look at this, when I look at, you know, and I apply it as like an I statement or just as me, as I look at that jaywalking guy, man, that is just pure madness right there. But that was me, you know what I mean? It just, I can solely come alongside it. It says, on through the years, the conduct continues, accompanied by his continued promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Well, for me, it was the promises is like, well, I'm not going to do it this time. You know, let me go over here to this sober living for 30 days. I'll be good. Right. I didn't need AA. I got the wheel, man. I'm cool. Like, leave me alone, man. I'm just not going to drink for a while and everything will be all right. You know what I mean? And then, you know, finally he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce and he's held up, you know, to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking out idea out of his head. I mean, I literally tried everything I could think of to not use or drink, but every time it broke me out of handcuffs. Every time. And it would lead me to just madness. You know what I mean? It's just this madness. But yet, what was it going to stop me? I mean, nothing could ever stop me. You know what I mean? I would just go on and on. And I'd have all these promises, you know, and all this justification of, oh, well, it's this and it's like that. And it's like, you know what I mean? And then I really, you know, I think what I really relate to a lot about you, Joe, is that thing, man, when you say about think it through, are you freaking kidding me? What do you mean think it through? I just really love that when you get into that, because you have such passion and you start sharing that, because it's so true, right? It's like, think it through, dude. I'm going to think my way to Jews. I'm not going to think my way to call anybody. It's like, no, I'm not. Like, even if I think at all, I'm just going to say, fuck it, right? And I'm just going to use, right? And so, because I don't have anything to stop that. I don't have any other preen. Like, no human's going to stop me from that. Like, what? I can't stop me. What humans? Like, it's just not going to happen, right? And it's like, I got to break myself to the bitter end. But yet, there I go, right? Like, what? Like, what? I'm downtown. I'm homeless on a piece of cardboard with a plastic bag in my hand. And I still want to use? Like, what kind of thinking is that? That's like, that's, you know what I mean? And that's what it took for me. And so, and then you hear this thing is that, you know what I mean? And they tell us, like, well, look at all these illustrations. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, okay, you know, maybe so or maybe not, right? And it goes on to say, some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply because my thinking's going to tell me that you are full of crap. Or I'll justify it in a way to make it sound like it's full of crap. However it's going to be, right? It's just madness. And then, you know what I mean? It goes on and then we hear about Fred. But what is it that is that's so compelling? Because then, it, you know, we go through all this and we hear about Fred. We hear about Fred's story and everything. But then it says, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink or drug or whatever, right? I just don't have it. But there's one thing that I can have, right? And that is, it must come from a higher power, man. Took me a long time to realize that. But as I go through this again now, first time, second time through this workshop here, and as I was talking with my sponsor today, and this stuff is coming alive like in a way I've never could imagine. It's just popping out at me, right? I mean, I'm a guy who was, you know, within the Salvation Army and the church every day. And yeah, okay, I'm doing all these things. But was I checking off boxes or was I having a personal relationship with my higher power that could relieve me of my sanity? Not just because I stopped drinking. Okay, well, my life was there. Now I had to feel things. Now I had to learn how to deal with them. And I had to learn how to ask for help. Because you know why? Norm, he's going to grab the wheel and say, I got it. And I always crash and burn, fire engine or the jaywalking guy, you know what I mean? And I learned through this program, through people like Tyla and Joe and Christian, my first sponsor, and Jared, is that I need to be God reliant. And even knowing that in my heart, but was I really being God reliant, right? I had to ask myself that deep inside, man, are you really being God reliant, Lord? What are you doing when nobody else is looking? What are you thinking? Where are you at with that? Are we shining? Is it an expectation of what I look on the outside? Or am I looking in? Because when I look in, that's when my healing is going to begin. And so, you know, today I look in today, you know what I mean? And I got to admit my faults, man. And I got to come to that place, you know, and, you know, God's
thumbs up
in a lot of ways. Thanks. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, I have God who's there for me, and I call him Jesus, and he takes care of me and he holds me and he guides me and he loves me, and that's what matters the most. Thank you for letting me share.
Maybe one more burning desire.
How about Norma? She has a year that in a couple days ago. How about Norma sharing?
Hi, I'm Norma, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Thank you, Norma, for calling on me. I'm always so frightened to talk that I'll say something stupid. But Joe, you have hit so many spots, and the book, you know, I'm like Fred. I came in, I stopped and I started on different levels, you know, after 17 years fear. Or the last relapse a year ago, it was because my mama was gonna die. I thought she was gonna die. So I asked God to, I started to smoke here in the Netherlands, but how it started before my mama, I thought my mama was going to die. I moved from Texas to Michigan, from a state that was illegal to a state that was legal. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in the United States now. I've been living in the Netherlands and doing all this stuff all the time, you know, without a problem. So I was in heaven here. So then when I got to Michigan, I thought, oh my goodness, maybe after 8 years of being sober now, I've been going to meetings, and I just got this sublime thought that I could use some, you know, I could start and use some weed. And I did. And when I did, I couldn't stop. I was negotiating with God and asking God and telling him, ah, it's okay. Thank you for letting me using this, you know, to get me through this depression with my mom. And then when I got back to the United States, I still could smoke because I came to Holland to where my mom was at. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in heaven again. I can use and I can use. I couldn't stop. I could not stop. And the depression that came with the thought that I couldn't stop was, it was just horrible. So now I thought I'm an alcoholic, so I can't use, you know, I can't drink, but I can have some pot. It didn't matter. I was also a crack addict. It doesn't matter what I put into my system. When I once I start with something, whether it's a pill, whether it's, you know, pot, I cannot stop. The only way I could stop, I told you I could come in on different levels, but I could only go out with the help of a higher power. I could only stop through the help of a higher power. So I started to confess. I started to confess to some people that were spiritual, my spiritual leaders, and they started praying for me. And when they started praying for me, I laid that thing down until today. I can't do it without the higher power. Thank you guys for letting me share.
Thank you,
Norma, thank you so much.
Turn it over to you, Tyler.
Tyler, alcoholic addict, crack addict. So I see some of my sisters and brother crack addicts are on tonight. So I'm a big crack addict. I want to thank Joe for an incredible meeting, an incredible workshop. Fantastic, Joe. And I want to give you the homework assignment. So I hope that you guys have a pen because I have a couple of things I want to tell you. The homework assignment is the unmanageability, the second half of the first step, spiritual malady, unmanageability, whatever you want to call it. You're going to, I want to get the questionnaire. In the 1, 2, 3 questionnaire on page 33, it's going to ask you to inventory the bedevilments, okay? It's going to ask you to inventory on page 33 of the 1, 2, 3 questionnaire. It's going to say, are you having trouble with personal relationships? Okay. Write down the 10 most important relationships in your life. Through prayer, ask God to reveal to you the 10 most important. You already know them. And after you write them down, say this prayer. Let's say that you have 10 of the most important relationships. Let's say your mom is on the top, okay? You're going to say this prayer. God, please show me what my trouble is with my mother, okay? I want you to do this with prayer and intuitively let God show you what the trouble is. God, please show me what my trouble is with my brother. God, please show me what the trouble is with my boss. And things will come off your pen that you would not have thought of. So I wanted you to write that down, the 10 most important relationships. And God, please show me what my trouble is with my cousin, with my wife, whatever it is. And that you will read with your step partner this week, and then we will go over the bedevilments. This is the finish of step one, and the unmanageability, and I'm so excited to spend time with you on that next week. And does anyone have any questions? Real quick, I want to tell you something. At this point in the work, sometimes, you know, I have to ask myself, am I relying on my power to to continue in this workshop, or am I relying on God's power?
What's because this right? is
what, honey? What, Joe? Okay. I have to ask myself that because it's so important that I'm relying on the power of God to see me through each week, because it is hard that we are going to get, we are going deeper and deeper. And so I ask you through prayer, through quiet time, to rely on God and asking God to give you the strength, to give you the insight, to reveal what God wants you to see as you continue in this workshop. And I'm so grateful all of so many of you are still with us. And I mean, I'm having a great experience through the work myself. So is there any questions before we wrap it up? We will be here a few minutes, 5-10 minutes afterwards, if anyone has any comments or sharing they need to do. And this week,
you want to mention the
yes, this weekend is a conference. There's a conference out of Eastlake this weekend, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday till noon, and lots of the workshop givers from San Diego are speaking. I'm the Saturday night speaker, and Nathan Jones is Friday night, Leanne is the Sunday noon speaker, and you can see the schedule is up on BBA Works. Okay, Joe, back to you.
Wait, Tyler, what was the homework? What was the homework? I missed it. I'm sorry.
The homework is, let me give it to you after. Stay on after, okay?
Okay, I will. Okay.
Okay.
Rick, do you want to close us with the Serenity Prayer?
Yes, Joe. Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.